Blog Talk Radio.
Morning, and thank you for joining us on Three Women, Three Ways. We are the show that talks about some stuff that you're not going to hear in general, conversation and talk shows on the radio. We talk about a lot of things like interpersonal violence and violence against women and bullying and all sorts of things that you're not going to hear too much about. And I think, although you've heard a lot about this, you haven't heard about it from our take today. And that is the book 50 Shades of Grey. It's been in the news for a couple of years now, first because when it came out in book form, and now because it's coming out in a movie. And so there's a lot of conversation going on about it. Some consider it just a dirty book. Others consider it rather liberating and kind of like lady porn. The more supposedly gentle, less blatant kind of pornography that women tend to go for, if they go for pornography. But there's another take on this book, and that's mostly what we're going to talk about today. And that is some associations that researchers have found, at least in one study, that are rather alarming, I think. Joining us today is one of the authors of the study, and I guess the main initiator of the study. I'm not sure. She'll correct me if I'm wrong on that one. Her name is Amy Bonomi, and she's from University of Michigan. I grew up in Ohio, so Michigan State University, I'm sorry. So my first thought is, the notorious rivals.
That's right.
But it's MSU, Michigan State University, and they did a study on 50 Shades of Grey. Thank you for joining us, Amy.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. We kind of did this rather quickly when we decided to do the show, so I'm getting to know Amy at the same time that our listeners are. Amy is a PhD, and she is at Michigan State University, and she has focused on long-term health effects of domestic violence, dating violence, child abuse, the intimacy dynamics processes that keep violent relationships intact. Now, why are you saying, oh, violent relationships, DV, what does that have to do with a little light beach reading? Well, I think the study is going to reveal some of that reasoning to you. Amy, first of all, let's get the basics out of the way. You've read 50 Shades of Grey, I assume.
I have read 50 Shades of Grey.
Yeah. And just as a person, your initial response to it was, this is silly, this is light reading, this is, you know, what was your initial response as a person
well,
not as a researcher?
Good question. The initial response was actually just how troubling the relationship dynamics are between Anastasia and Christian and how much they mimic what we see in relationships that involve domestic violence in the real world.
We were talking a little bit off the air, and I said the thing, because I also read the book, and my basic reaction to it was similar, that this is kind of a power dynamic going on here, and it is an alarming one. Even the socioeconomic differences between the two characters, Anastasia and Christian, they start out way different. You know, she considers herself plain, she's broke, she's blue-collar, and she's very naive. Christian is wealthy, an entrepreneur, extremely good looking and very much in control. So starting off right there, you've got this kind of interesting dynamic that sets up the whole book for unequal power in that relationship.
I mean, absolutely, you hit on it. You really hit on it in the sense that there are multiple aspects of power imbalance, and you know, the first one to sort of start out with is that economic imbalance. And what when I was first reading the book and teaching a graduate seminar in intimate partner violence, and as we were looking through the theories on violence, we kept returning to the idea of 50 Shades and just how common, just how much overlap we saw between the series and the book. So a team of graduate students and I decided to analyze 50 Shades of Grey using national definitions of intimate partner violence or domestic violence from the Centers for Disease Control. And so what we really did was a systematic analysis of the book and showed exactly how the relationship outlines the interlocking pattern of abuse, like intimidation, stalking, social isolation, humiliation, and sexual violence, really that you would see in real-world abusive relationships. So the power dynamic is completely in favor of Christian in the book.
Yeah. Yeah, he has all the things going for him, the money, the resources, the emotional distance required to not empathize too much with the person that he is making subservient. He's got it all going for him. Mm-hmm. And yet we are supposed to see him as some sort of sympathetic character, I think, when we read the book. Why don't you tell us, if you've read the book, or even if you haven't, I think at this point you pretty much know what's going on in the book, even if you haven't read it. We'd like to know what you have to say. I know I've gotten some emails. One person said she would never read that book. And I've heard people say that because they consider it pornography, but I haven't heard a lot of people saying that they would never read the book or that they didn't like the book based on this connection with that power differential and how dangerous that can be. So if you would like to pick a bone with us and tell us no, it's just light reading, leave it alone, or yes, I agree with you and it made me uncomfortable, give us a phone call, 646-378-3. You know what? I have to put on my glasses to read the numbers. Isn't that pathetic, Amy? oh, no, I feel like, you know, I need to have a cane right about now. 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. Give us a call. Join our conversation. Let us know what you think. You know, one of the emails I got, Amy, said that this woman emailed me and said that she wonders how many of the readers of this book are male. And we'll get into that question later. But meanwhile, okay, so we've got this huge power differential. It's couched in this book, which is basically a glorified, dirty version of a romance novel, supposedly.
It's also a glamorization of violence against women, really, when you look at the dynamics.
Yeah. And they make the guy who, you know, this Christian, they do make him a very tragic and sympathetic figure, you know, which is kind of interesting because basically he's a perv. I'm sorry, but he is, you know, he's a masochist. And to portray that person as sympathetic, I mean, wow, you know, I mean, that takes some stretching, I think. Okay, so you and your team read the novel. What, you know, when your researchers read the novel, what, just again, off the cuff, their first initial reactions were the same, that it was a stunning correlation to what you were seeing and working with?
An absolute stunning correlation. In fact, the graduate students were the ones who kept sort of raising the issue of like, wow, this is so much like 50 Shades of Grey, which is receiving so much press. And it's so popular.
Positive press. Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's a little salacious, it's naughty, it's just seen as you know, some sort of little wild trip, you know, into fantasy land, and that's really alarming. So tell us what you found in your research. What were the basic conclusions of your research?
Of our new study?
Yes.
Okay, so what we wanted, we did a follow-up study essentially, and we surveyed about 650 women who were between the ages of 18 and 24, and of course that's a critical developmental period because it's the most common period in life where increased sexual intimacy and love explorations are occurring in the life, across the lifespan. So we surveyed them to ask about their, is this what you want me to cover here? surveyed them about their readership of 50 Shades of Grey and their exposure to a number of things, such as their violence victimization histories and their experiences with eating disorders, binge drinking, and number of sexual practices. And, of course, all of those health behaviors have been previously shown in empirical studies to be associated with violence victimization, so that's why we were concentrating on those.
And we would call those self-destructive behaviors or self-harming behaviors?
They can be harmful behaviors, absolutely. So
yeah.
Eating disorders, binge drinking, and binge drinking we defined as having 5 or more drinks on a single occasion on 6 or more days in the last month. So fairly heavy drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. So that's your demographic. Where did you find the people? How did you conduct the survey? Online
Yes, we did an online survey. We randomly sampled students from Ohio State University. So we used the registrar's records and randomly sampled using email addresses. And recruited that way. And again, that 18 to 24-year-old period is really a critical period because developmentally we know that is when increased sexual intimacy and love is being explored.
Well, even aside from that, that's kind of when our, I raise 2 children who are adults now, and I always think of their brains like Jell-O. You know, they they have to actually gel and come together and kind of solidify before they're actually thinking like an adult. And during that stage in life, I think is when I'm being very technical here. When that gelification process takes place, that's when we're setting, we're establishing the basis for our behaviors, for our beliefs. I mean, am I wrong on that?
No, it's correct.
Yeah.
So it's a
tricky, difficult period to start with, no matter how you look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then you throw in something like 50 Shades of Grey. So that was your demographic. What
mm-hmm.
else did you find in when you looked at the responses to your survey?
Sure. So what we found actually is a pretty troubling pattern, but not surprising to us. So what we found first is that compared to women who didn't read the book, those who mm-hmm. had read the first book, at least the first book, but not all 3 books, they were more likely to have a verbally abusive partner and also more likely to have a partner who demonstrated stalking tendencies. And what do I mean by stalking tendencies? Sending unwanted text messages, calling on an unwanted basis, showing up in person when a female didn't want the partner to. And they were also more likely, 80% more likely, to report fasting for more than 24 hours and using diet aids. And again, those would be indicators of eating disorders. Critical. And then really the second piece is when we looked at women who read all 3 books compared to non-readers, they were 65% more likely to binge drink. So, again, having 5 or more drinks.
Oh, my goodness.
Mm-hmm. On 6 or more days in last month. 65% more likely, yep. And 65% more likely to also use diet aids. And then they were also 63% more likely to have 5 or more intercourse partners in their lifetime. And to make a note about the intercourse partners, there's nothing wrong with having a high number of intercourse partners. However, what prior empirical studies have shown over and over and over again is a strong relationship between having a high number of sexual partners and violence victimization in women. So, that's an important correlate. We are all for women enjoying their sexuality, enjoying 50 Shades of Grey, but at the same time, just, having a critical eye when they read literature like this and being aware of the risk.
Well, it's interesting. When I first heard about 50 Shades of Grey, I associated it with, the middle-class woman looking for a little temporary, fantasy from her mm-hmm. day-to-day drudgery. And typically, I think that's how we associate the romance novel. I know my mother-in-law, rest in peace, loved. She was highly educated. She was a professional housewife and mother, and she loved reading those romance novels.
Mm-hmm.
Gave her a little bit of escape, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
That 50 Shades of Grey goes beyond that, and it's interesting to me that the readership that you found was so young.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, we deliberately concentrated on that younger group, but you're absolutely right, and we're certainly not suggesting that women not read the book or not be allowed to enjoy the book, but just to have a critical eye that, you know, embedded within that the relationship process in the book are really these very problematic abuse patterns that are very similar to what we see in real-world abusive relationships. We had argued in our prior analysis is that the eroticism in the book could have been achieved without the underlying abuse dynamic. So there are certainly a lot of books about BDSM erotica out there. So the book could have been crafted a little differently to avoid those abuse patterns. This book is not unlike what we see in Twilight, which I have not read, but was also a very popular fiction series, also noted for demonstrating really problematic patterns of violence against women, and there have been other analyses done of that book.
Well, and then those series of books were definitely geared toward that demographic, that
exactly.
age group.
Exactly.
And that's interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is all this stuff accidental, or am I, you know, some sort of paranoid out there saying, so why are they writing these books and series and things? Obviously, the answer to that is to make money. I mean, that's why people do pretty much everything. And not that I have a problem with that. I mean, I do things to make money, too. Is there some sort of reason that we seem to see these kinds of things that are kind of specifically geared toward that age group? I think that despite my conversation about, you know, the middle-aged lady, you know, reading it for escapism, I think that the book is definitely geared toward that younger demographic just based on the ages of the main characters.
Mm-hmm.
So is there something socially, or do you not want to speculate? Why this kind of why is the motivation there to write to this age group?
That's hard to say. I think we would need to interview the authors to find out more about that. You know, I suspect there is obviously a fascination within American society and culture with being young, with being beautiful and young and wealthy. And so it's not surprising, at least when we're talking here about 50 Shades of Grey, that's sort of the demographic that's upheld in the book and promoted. It's also certainly, as females in society, the pressure to be in a relationship, the pressure to find, Mr. Perfect and Mr. Perfect who has money, certainly fits, I think, with what E.L. James, the author of 50 Shades of Grey, was trying to achieve in the book and would certainly appeal to women who align with that particular perspective.
Well, sure. I mean, we all daydream about, you know, that. I'm dating myself now, but what was the blonde, long-haired guy's name that was on the cover of all the romance novels? Not Julio. That was the
Fabio.
Fabio.
What was his name? Fabio.
Yes. Certainly, you know, we have all at different times in our lives pictured ourselves being, you know, Fabio'd. And then when we get older, we think about Mr. Cleaned. same difference, you know, same difference. We all have our little fantasies, you know. Every teenage, you know, nerd with acne pictures himself, being absolutely irresistible to, you know, J-Lo or something. So that's kind of human nature, you know, to fantasize and think about those kinds of things. But to me, and again, you can tell me I'm being overly suspicious here, but to me it's almost like a decided effort to bring these concepts to that particular demographic. Mm-hmm. And maybe that the only motivation is money. They have a lot of money to spend, that age group. So I don't know, but I think it would be. Have you thought about interviewing the author and sharing your research with her?
We tried to get an interview with her. We tried to get an interview actually with her after our last study last year, and at that time she was not taking interviews.
Even for research, huh? That's interesting.
Well, even for research, okay. And it was actually MSNBC had interviewed me, and I believe they tried to contact her as well for that.
Oh, okay. Okay. Huh, interesting. Okay, so basically you've done two studies. Mm-hmm. The first one specifically covered what?
So the first one analyzed the relationship in 50 Shades of Grey using a national definition of intimate partner violence or domestic violence. And that national definition came from the Centers for Disease Control, which is the nation's leading prevention institution on violence. And what we showed in that, of course, was a problematic underlying pattern of abuse that mimics what we see in real-world abusive relationships.
And then you did a follow-up.
And we did a follow-up study. So we then approached women, surveyed them on an online survey to ask about whether they'd read 50 Shades and whether they experienced a number of health behaviors that are known to be associated with violence victimization. We assessed violence victimization and other risk factors known to be associated with violence victimization. Of course, we showed an association between having read 50 Shades and having a verbally abusive partner, a partner who stalked the person, as well as some of the health risk behaviors that we assessed.
And you guys weren't necessarily surprised by this. I mean, it seems to me that you probably hypothesized that that would be the case.
Yeah, we were not surprised by this. I mean, there's a wide body of literature noting associations between viewing violent television, for example, and antisocial behaviors and aggressive tendencies done in children as well as adolescents. And then also other empirical studies have shown, having read hypersexualized magazines like Cosmo, you tend to be more obsessed with body image. So those associations there. And also, number of studies have shown if you watch pornography, you are much more likely to have violent attitudes toward women than if you are not watching pornography. So this certainly fits with that. It's just nobody had really done it with a popular fiction book.
Yeah. Well, and the idea that, most violent pornography is created by males, I would assume. And, it's kind of the male fantasy, I would think. And here we're talking about the female fantasy. So to me, that's what makes it kind of like, oh, okay, this is newsworthy. but maybe there's a whole world of, female porn out there that I'm not familiar with, which would not be surprising. Join us, please, in our conversation. I'd like to know what you thought of the book, whether you think that this is just making, way too much out of it. Tell us what you think. Phone number is 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. And I didn't have to put my glasses on to read it this time, Amy. I don't know whether that says a testament to my eyes or my cognitive ability. okay, so we've got this book, and then it is so wildly popular. Mm-hmm. I think there's always been a market for this kind of literature, if you want to use that term, but so wildly popular, that's surprising to me. And again, it's that very young demographic, I think, that are making it so popular. You're not surprised by this because of your research and your education, right?
Mm-hmm. Surprised by its popularity?
Yeah.
No, not at all. I mean, especially because the author does a fantastic job of weaving in the fantasy aspect of it as well as the romance and love piece. And so, again, it kind of fits with what feminine ideals are in society around that draw to be in a relationship, that push to be in a relationship, the romanticized love. So that's sort of the hook, and I think, in keeping women involved in the book. But, again, we would have to ask them directly what did keep them involved if they did like it. Because I think many, many women do also see the problematic abuse patterns that exist in the relationship. So I think reading the book from the perspective of what a healthy relationship is would make it very clear that this book has problematic abuse patterns in it. So some with a distorted image of what a relationship should be.
I know when I checked the book out of the library, and I returned it, and the librarian was there, and we were talking. I said, I can't believe I read this book. And she said, I read it too. What did you think? And I said, well, I actually found it boring after a while. And she said, I just kept thinking, oh, for God's sake, leave the guy already. I'm going to sneeze here. Hold on. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
It's allergy season. Tansy ragwort. So when you chose to do your research, what was your sample size? How many people?
So for this particular study, it was around 655 females, young women.
Okay, which is a fairly substantial group size.
Mm-hmm.
And what age were your researchers, your student assistants?
In the original analysis, they were in their early to mid-20s. So,
mm-hmm.
And in the second round, in the most recent study, we had age range from early 20s to late 40s.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
So,
mm-hmm. Did you see within your research group different attitudes about the book based on their demographics, their ages?
Not necessarily, because we're all sort of coming at it from a feminist lens looking at, as you're pointing out earlier, the power differential that exists in the relationship certainly violates feminist standards of equality in relationships for women and men.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
we really, while we come from a range of backgrounds, my background is in public health, some of my researchers' backgrounds are in psychology, human development, we still have that, maintain that sort of consistent feminist lens in reading and doing the analysis.
Mm-hmm. And were there any surprises when you did your study?
There were no surprises. So, again, not surprised to find an association between reading 50 Shades and having a violence victimization history. Not surprising that we also found associations with disordered eating behaviors, as well as binge drinking and having a high number of sexual partners. We have another analysis that's currently under review where we looked at traditional gender roles and the association with reading 50 Shades and liking it or not liking it. So I can't speak about the results of those studies yet because it's not out, but that will be coming out next.
Yeah. That's
mm-hmm.
interesting.
Because mm-hmm.
There's a difference between, having your little fantasy and reality.
Mm-hmm.
That is so interesting, as a feminist, one of the second wave of feminism here. It surprises me that with so many options available
mm-hmm.
to people today, including young women, that we still have this fallback onto this. I mean, I think a fantasy from 50 years ago would have been the same. Rich, handsome, falls mildly. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
We have made such strides in so many things, even though I think an argument can be made that we're slipping backwards in a lot of them. But still, the Gen Xers and the millennials, they really don't know a world where a woman couldn't do something if she really wanted to, or where a woman would be totally financially dependent. And those were the norms 50, 60 years ago. So despite all of that, we still have, huge numbers of women reading these books.
Mm-hmm.
Do you agree with me, and this, I know this is just speculation, you didn't study this, but do you agree with me that probably the readers are female, that men would not probably be interested in this kind of a book?
Well, it's certainly written for a female demographic. It's funny because I used to teach a large sexuality class at Ohio State University before joining Michigan State. I was actually in Ohio. When I would ask my students, how many of you have read 50 Shades? And I said, come on, fess up. And, usually I would have about a dozen males in class. And if they said they read 50 Shades of Grey, they said they read it because their girlfriend and or wife and or female partner asked them to read it.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, what nice guys.
Yes, yes.
To read it just because they're, yeah, yeah. Yes. We have a caller here, and I'm going to go to him or her. Caller, are you with us?
Yes.
Yes, hi. You want to give us your first, well, you want to give us your first name and where you're calling from?
Hi, my name's Linda, and I'm calling from Arizona.
Okay,
and
hi, Linda.
Hi. I just wondered if there are plans to continue this research in a, you know, in a either the same way or in different ways.
That's a great question.
Amy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's a great question. So, yeah. So this study that we currently did looked at the relationship between 50 Shades and violence victimization. Disordered eating, binge drinking. Our next study, which is actually currently under review, is looking at the relationship between reading 50 Shades and having identification with what we call traditional gender roles. So the idea that males are in control, females are subservient to men. And so while I'm not allowed to reveal the implications of those findings yet, that should be coming out in the next year.
Okay. Do you see doing this on a long-term basis, or does this have a limited lifespan, this study, the information that you can draw from this?
Well, no, I mean, the other piece that we would really like to do is to do in-depth interviews with women. So the study that we're talking about today was an online survey, but we would like to sit down with women in an in-depth conversation, so we've got an hour with them. And ask them, what drew you to the book? What kept you engaged? What did you like about the book? What didn't you like about the books? And if they did like the books, really what the draw was for them. So we've hypothesized a little bit about what that might be. It might be, you know, that love and romance and sense of fantasy that the author so effectively wove in.
No. And I would be interested, too, because some of it is sexy, you know. I mean, some of it's a little bit of a turn-on. Is that what drew women to it, you know, the thought of having a little bit of titillation in their life, you know, without...
Absolutely. I mean, yes, there's you know, obviously we've got some erotica and other types of BDSM literature available. This is, I think, one of the first books that really encouraged women to openly express their sexuality in a publicly acceptable way. You know, we're sort of given a double message in society as females that we're supposed to be sexy, seductive, but at the same time show sexual restraint. And so this really opened it up in an acceptable way for women. But at the same time... Yeah. We're arguing that it's entrapping them further because it's setting up a relationship ideal that's based on problematic abuse patterns. So, like I said earlier, we think the erotica and the sexiness of the BDSM could have been achieved without the underlying abuse. And, in fact, the abuse itself, as represented in the book, goes against of what we know about egalitarian BDSM relationships. So... It's at odds.
Okay,
with...
now say that in layman's terms. It goes against.
So in negotiated BDSM relationships, the use of alcohol and other substances is a violation of consent. So usually there are agreed upon terms in sort of entering these BDSM relationships that both parties agree upon. We didn't see that in 50 Shades. In fact, we see a violation, we see intimidation and coercion being used above and beyond the power dynamics that would be typically used in BDSM relationships, as well as the use of alcohol to coerce those activities in the female character.
Yeah. If you're not familiar, if you haven't read the book, what we're talking about here is that the Christian really puts the pressure on the naive young thing who starts out as a virgin and really puts the pressure on her to, in order to have a relationship, she has to submit to this masochistic stuff that he has. So a lot of pressure, you know, a lot of pressure there for her. We have another caller, Amy, if you don't mind.
Sure.
Okay. Hi, caller. Thanks for calling in, checking in with us. Hello, are you there? Well, I don't know what happened to our caller from the 520 area code.
Okay.
But I found the whole phenomenon very interesting. And although I read the first one just to kind of know what everybody's talking about, and I saw also that power differential right away, I have absolutely no interest in reading the next two. I mean, it's like, you know, talk about beating a dead horse, you know. I mean, really?
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, really? We can get two more huge, you know, 500-page books out of this concept?
Mm-hmm.
Do your studies expand to those others in the series?
You know, they didn't. In fact, we had some people write and say, well, obviously you hadn't read all three books because in the end she falls in love with him. But actually, you know, just sort of taking a step back and thinking about what those two additional books represent, the abuse patterns in them actually, from our perspective, worsen. So the stalking tendencies worsen, the intimidation worsens. So if we were to analyze books two and three, sure, there might be still the elements of love woven in, but really highly problematic types of manipulation being used.
Yeah. And do you know what happens in the second two books? I know, you know, spoiler alert, folks, if you're really interested, she does end up leaving him at the end of book one.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, and I have to give her props because, you know, the character at the end does develop a little bit of a spine and says, nope, this is not for me, and does leave him, mm-hmm. even though he tries to pressure her to stay. I have mm-hmm. no idea. I mean, I'm assuming that because there are two books following up that she must have gone back at some point, mm-hmm.
She essentially returns to him at the beginning of the second book. The first chapter opens with a phone call and reconnection, so which, again, is not unlike what we would see in real-world abusive relationships. On average, it takes women about 8 attempts to leave an abusive relationship or exit an abusive relationship.
And did you know that on average it takes a person 7 attempts to quit smoking?
I did not.
I mean, I always just think, okay, that's just smoking. What about, you know, compare that to tearing up your entire life and future and hopes and dreams. Of course it would take a while. Because a lot of times people are very critical of a victim. Why didn't she get out of there? What was wrong with her? Blah, blah, blah. Well, you know, why don't you quit smoking on the first try, folks? Easier said than done, right?
Well, plus the dynamics of domestic violence really are, I mean, the most at risk that women are in an abusive relationship is when they do attempt to leave. That's when they're at risk of even more harsh violence as well as death. So
Yes. That's
like a critically, in fact, we tell people, just general advice is don't, just because you know somebody in an abusive relationship, encourage them to leave. Really a safety plan has to be in place and all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
I do some lecturing on domestic violence issues, and a woman stopped me at a Home Depot of all places and asked me some questions and said that her neighbor, or her acquaintance, her friend, was in a domestic violence situation, and she won't leave.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, does the woman tell you why she doesn't want to leave?
Mm-hmm.
And the person talking to me said, well, and she said it with such a disdain. She said, oh, she thinks he's going to kill her. And I said, he quite possibly can.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's that's a very real fear.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this woman was kind of surprised that I said that, but it is. It's an absolutely very real fear for women leaving violent relationships, and I think a lot of times bystanders don't quite understand that.
Exactly.
On the other hand... Go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, the threats and the intimidation that are used, if any kind of indication that a woman is leaving by the abuser is very high, as well as manipulation, often what we see in domestic violence relationships are what we call the sympathy appeal. So the abuser will appeal to the victim's sympathy. You know, he'll say, I have mental health issues, or things that will draw her in to make her feel bad. and will elicit a response of empathy. So it makes it really challenging. And sort of weaving in the trauma that many women experience in domestic violence relationships, it's a challenging dynamic.
Well, sure, because, I mean, this is the person that you married, and, you know, it's a lot easier said than done to just say, okay, I'm done. I'm done with you. Because you are giving up all those hopes and dreams and history and, you know, all that other stuff that we all romanticize and consider valuable, you know, in our lives. So it's a tough thing. Join our conversation, please. It is 646-378-0430. That's 646-378-0430. Let us know what you think. Join our conversation. So getting back to the book, 50 Shades of Grey, the woman obviously made a fortune, you know, with who authored these books. The movie will probably make a fortune because people want to go see what all the fuss is about. Mm-hmm. So there's a huge financial motivation for these kinds of books and messages to be sent out there.
Mm-hmm.
What can be done to counteract those messages? I mean, most of the people who read your study are not people who will be lining up to see the movie at the local Cineplex.
Mm-hmm.
So,
well, I mean, some very sort of basic grassroots prevention strategies that we're suggesting that really children at a very young age through adolescence and young adulthood should be taught to consume fiction, television, movies, magazines, and other mass media with a critical eye. And so that really requires, you know, parents and educators also knowing a bit about how to dissect these media representations with a critical eye as well. So we need to have better messages about healthy sexuality, healthy body image, healthy gender role expectations. And these conversations really need to start as early as grade school. There are some very effective school-based programs that are out there. Safe Dates is used with middle school students. It targets abuse prevention through relationship skills training. And there's a highly effective program called Coaching Boys into Men, which is a coach-based program. So we know that coaches have a very influential role in influencing how young men think, both on and off the field. And so
we had one of the organizers from Coaching Men or Boys into Men on our show last week, I think.
Oh, great, great.
Talking about the what appears to be high incidence of domestic violence in professional athletes.
Mm-hmm.
So, including Steubenville, that the one of the boys in the Steubenville thing was sentenced to a year in jail. He's just gotten out, and he's back on his football team.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. So we have a lot of messages out there that male aggression is desirable.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that message in this book as well?
Well, certainly, the book is constructed to prioritize Christian's sexuality and his sexual needs. So we talked about the power differential earlier in our conversation. So really when you look at the sexual patterns as well, the sexual interactions are all designed for, they're initiated by him. So they follow traditional gender role scripts. All the sex interactions are initiated by him. Her sexual pleasure is guided by him. She's cast as a sexual apprentice and he's the expert. So it certainly fits with societal scripts of how men are cast.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he says, willingly admits that he's had umpteen sex partners, all of whom were basically sexual slaves,
mm-hmm.
and she is a virgin when the book starts. Certainly not when the book ends, but, you know.
right.
Yeah, I'd say she's pretty much been through the ringer by the time the book ends. But, yeah, that whole stereotype of you know, little virgin and experienced wealthy man, again, that whole power thing. And it made me uncomfortable. You know, I didn't take the time to actually verbalize that this is a dangerous power differential, but it definitely made me uncomfortable in reading the book.
Mm-hmm.
So do you think I don't know if you have children. You don't even have to say whether you do or not. But would you have your daughter read this book or allow her to read this book?
Again, we're certainly not suggesting that women not read the book or that the book, you know, be banned. However, it's important for, adolescent girls and women to understand that the health behaviors represented in the study are problematic. The violence patterns in the book are problematic. So, again, going back to that critical lens, using that to kind of guide them through the book would be helpful.
I think, again, I've raised a couple kids, and my son, I remember when he was kind of little, I don't remember what age he was, but he went over to a friend's house, and when he came home, you could always tell, I mean, with kids, you can always tell because they have this little grin on their faces when they think that they've done something that you're way too, way too naive to know, you know, what they just did. And he came home from a friend's house, and his friend had Playboy. His friend's older brother had Playboy. And so definitely, he was snickering because he saw Playboy. And I finally got it out of him that, you know, the boy's brother had these magazines. So I sat him down, and I said, well, do you know that those magazines, you know, the women in those magazines don't really look like that? They just make them look like that, you know, with airbrushing and stuff. And he goes, oh. And then I said, yeah. And I said, and you know what else? Each one of those girls is somebody's sister, because my son had a sister, or kid, you know, their child or what. Anyway, years later, my son said that I basically ruined pornography for him, you know. He no longer was ever able to go down that road and find enjoyment in pornography. But I think it's important to discuss that. I think it's impossible to keep your kids from reading something like that or seeing something like that or even just knowing what's going on, but I think it's crucial that we at least talk with them about it.
Absolutely.
And explain our points of view.
Oh, absolutely. And as you mentioned, we're really surrounded by it when we look at television, movies, music. And even if you think about Rihanna and Eminem's Love the Way You Lie video that came out a few years ago, that's also a romanticization of violence against women. Hypersexualized representation of it.
Well, I think the entire music industry, for the most part, does the same thing. You know, I mean, it's certainly not hard to find music that is, I find, reprehensible in its treatment of women. I'm surprised they haven't set 50 Shades of Grey to music at this point. I'm sure I'd probably be a really hot sell. Is there an actual danger to literature like this?
The danger is the underlying context that books like 50 Shades of Grey, like music videos, like Love the Way You Lie, set for adolescents and young adults. Really, if there's a normalization and glamorization of violence against women, that's sending out a certain context and a certain message about what's appropriate in relationships. We know violence is not appropriate in relationships, but if that's what adolescents and young adults are being exposed to, it can make it difficult for them to recognize abuse in their own relationships when they're experiencing it.
Yes, that's true. That's true. It's kind of like, you know, watching violence over and over and over again. You kind of get used to it. You know, I mean, nobody blinks when they see blood and guts and whatever in the movies today. But I remember when it was, you know, you didn't really see that. They kind of covered it up. I mean, I remember watching old Roy Rogers things on TV when I was a kid, and you never saw any blood. You know, I mean, they shot their guns, but you never saw anybody going down and you know, dying from it. Today, it's just common to see that. I mean, if somebody doesn't get shot a few times and if there's not, you know, blood and guts in a movie, there's something wrong with it. Nobody goes to see it. So we just become more or less immune to any shock value in something like mm-hmm. that. And so you're contending that same kind of thing happens with these messages that basically condone violence against women.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly.
Okay. Complicated issues, because I'm sure there are people out there who are saying, oh, for heaven's sake, it's just a book. Just mm-hmm. a book. Leave it alone. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just some woman summer reading fantasy. Leave it be. Are we making too much out of this? I think that what you're saying is based on a pattern that we see, that you see. It's not making too much out of it. But, you know, are we just being overly sensitive to that?
Mm-hmm. Well, our studies certainly showed a relationship between reading women who read 50 Shades and a range of unhealthy behaviors and unhealthy health risks. So there's clear empirical evidence there. And that, like, it certainly corroborates what we see in other empirical literature, noting associations between exposure to violence television and antisocial tendencies and aggressive behavior.
Yeah.
So again, we can argue, oh, it's only fiction, but at the same time, what our study is showing is something different.
Yeah. Well, and proving a relationship doesn't prove causality. I'm being devil's advocate here. So, you know, it's like one of those old famous studies about women who smoke have more wrinkles. Well, do women who tend to have more wrinkles tend to smoke more, or do cigarettes cause wrinkles? You know, I mean, there's no proof that there's causality, that reading this book contributes it. But common sense would tell us it has to. I mean, at least my common sense would say, you know, pretty much has to. It's just so prevalent.
Yeah, no, our study, we were actually very clear that we weren't not able to determine causality in the study. So it's possible, either way, we're arguing that the relationship is inconsequential. So if women experience the adverse behaviors first, then reading 50 Shades might reaffirm those experiences. And if they read 50 Shades before experiencing the health behaviors assessed in our study, it's possible that the book could influence the onset of the behaviors by, again, creating that underlying context for the behaviors, the normalization of it. Just as you were saying earlier, I mean, watching television with lots of violence, it normalizes it for society.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. How long do you think that you're going to continue doing research on this particular topic, the 50 Shades of Grey thing?
That's a good question. We'd like to, you know, we would like to interview women this year. So I know for this year we'll be working on some additional manuscripts and a few follow-up interviews with women.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And your research, I assume, is published. Where would it be published?
Well,
if somebody wanted to read the whole study.
The study that we recently published this week is in the Journal of Women's Health.
Mm-hmm.
The Journal of Women's Health.
Oh, Journal of Women's Health, okay.
Journal of Women's Health, right.
Okay, yeah. And you can look that up in the library, and if you want to see more results of what they found.
You can actually find it online for free if you go to the Journal of Women's Health website. They're allowing 6 months of free access to the article.
Oh, really? How nice.
Mm-hmm.
Do they often do that?
They do for big articles like this.
Yeah. You know, University of Washington and Group Health out here have been really instrumental in doing a lot of research on domestic violence issues. And a lot of that is available free online, too. I think it's really, really neat when the journals, especially the educational journals and professional journals, allow free access for anyone to see what they have published. Because just because you're not an academic or a professional in the field doesn't necessarily mean you're not interested in finding out what the research says. So a little prop for women's mental health, is it?
Journal of Women's Health. Mm-hmm.
Journal of Women's Health, okay. So we've kind of hashed this around. We've talked about what could be the danger in two perceptions in reading this kind of material. you had said, well, we certainly don't want the book banned, and of course nobody wants the book banned. You know, we have to just educate people to understand what they're reading. And I know for myself, I mean, just because I read that doesn't mean that I'm going to allow behavior like that in my life. But these things are so subtle. They're just so subtle. They really work on us, and they work on our mental health, I guess, is the absolutely appropriate term and terminology. If somebody wanted to participate in your study, is that a possibility? Are you screening people, or do you just want to do random folks that you find?
Yeah, no, we are not currently working. We're looking for subjects, but typically, you know, we're in a university setting, and we would likely be going to students at Michigan State University next.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right.
Approaching.
Not going to go back to Ohio.
No.
What's wrong with Ohio?
Right.
I grew up in northern Ohio, right next to Cedar Point.
Okay.
Which I'm sure Amy knows, but probably no one else does. It's just a big amusement park up there. What else would you like to say? If I give you 2 minutes to say anything you want to say, go for it.
Well, I mean, what we found in our study is really an association between reading 50 Shades and a range of problematic health risks for women, including violence victimization, eating disorders, binge drinking, and having a high number of intercourse partners. And, well, we're not suggesting that 50 Shades be banned or that women should not be free to read 50 Shades. It's important that young adolescent women understand that the health behaviors we assessed are known risk factors for being in a violent relationship. And so really our message is that kids and adolescents and young adults be taught to consume fiction, television, movies, magazines with a critical eye. And parents and educators really, really play a critical role in engaging kids in these constructive conversations about sexuality, body image, healthy relationships, et cetera.
Yeah. And maybe the next sequel that they come out with should include, you know, what happens to Anastasia 40 years down the road.
Yeah.
Or even 25 years down the road. When she is living a life that she never thought she would live. Okay. I think we've covered it. Amy, I really appreciate, you jumping in here at the last minute. And I'm so rude. I didn't even ask you if I could call you Amy.
Dr.
Bonomi. Bonomi.
Yep.
And I hope it was okay that I just presumed to call you Amy. We do a lot of topics like this on our show, Amy, and I would hope that when you encounter people who are interested in your study, that you could refer them to this show. It's available on the archive at the webpage, which is www.blogtalkradio.com/3women3ways, and those are the digit 3. It's available to hear over again. Caller that we disconnected with, I'm so sorry, and would have loved to have heard from you. Next week, we're going to be having a show on bullying, not just school bullying, not just workplace bullying, but bullying and its relationship to interpersonal violence. And I have a little quote. I usually, Amy, try to end our show with a quote. And the quote that I found this week is actually not attributed to an individual author, but it is attributed to the Old Sage Bookshop in Prescott, Arizona. So if you're around there, and hopefully that bookshop is still here, sometimes a cigar is just a cigar, but a book is never just a book.
Okay.
I thought that was pertinent to today's topic. Amy, what do you think?
I think that sounds great.
Yeah, a book is never just a book.
Right.
So thank you for joining us again. Go to the archives to listen to the show again. Call us next week. Join in when we talk about bullying and its relationship to violence against other individuals and domestic violence. Enjoyed having you here, and we hope to see you next week. Thank you.
Thank you for having me. Bye-bye.
Bye.